We are getting towards the end of the day, and thank you all for sticking with us. There's sure been a lot of information coming at us today. I'm Cliff Lynch. Paul said, I am the director of the Coalition for Networked Information, but I also have been serving for the last few years as co-chair of the Board on Research Data and Information, along with first Fran Berman and now Alexa McRae as a fellow co-chair. And in that role, I just want to, you know, reiterate how delighted I am to see this conversation going forward and express appreciation to Bonnie and US CoData for all they've done to advance this. This whole issue of data citation has been very squarely on the board's agenda since very early on. It's fundamental infrastructure for enabling, data to be a first-class object and to be managed. So it's great to see how much has happened. Now, if you look at the agenda, you will see that there are a number of kind of bulleted items here. Some of them I think we've already covered pretty extensively, like where are we on the policy environment? Where are we on the infrastructure? Where are we on current attitudes and views and understanding of benefits and challenges? We have a workshop report which will be produced based on what's happened here and what's been said here, and it might be most helpful in our discussion for the next 40 minutes or so to focus on actions and things we missed, areas where the academies or other players can contribute, where activities or specific progress is needed, guidance to funders, others who are participating here. So I'd urge us to look to those kinds of issues in the conversation. Certainly, I'd say, you know, just reflecting back over the day, and I apologize, I had to miss the first couple of sessions, we've heard about a lot of, I won't say maturation of the field. This is not a mature world, but it's a world that maybe is starting to find its way into adolescence. It's characterized by a tremendous amount of dynamism, experimentation, trying things and seeing what really generates the most adoption. There are lots of challenges. The sheer number of repositories that are emerging and trying to understand the stability and sustainability and scope and qualification of those repositories and which ones we should trust and how to connect repositories to disciplinary communities and researchers is a huge challenge. This question of culture versus technology and infrastructure has woven its way through so many discussions today and is very real. I think one thing that has been very helpful that has come through very clearly is there are really several different agendas here. They are closely interrelated, but they are somewhat distinct. The agenda about reproducibility, doing good science, documenting your evidence, showing that your analysis is rigorous and supportable and that other people should be able to revisit that is one set of issues, sort of the sourcing of data, the introduction of data into a scientific debate. Then there's the question of citation and reuse and transitive credit, to use that wonderful term, and crediting sources. And that's a little different. Clearly they're connected, but the aims are a little bit different there. And I'd note that we've also recognized discovery or rediscovery of data as an issue. That's an issue that's a bit different than citation, but again, interrelated. I think we're coming to understand that discovery of data or rediscovery of data, especially for uses that are not closely related to its original creation, but perhaps significant recontextualizations of that data is a very hard problem and a very challenging one. And we're starting to see projects that are offering a better understanding of that. I'll just note a couple of issues that particularly make me nervous that have been at least alluded to, but certainly are on my nomination list for things that I feel like we need more progress on. One is that there's a lot of data that where sharing or the barriers to sharing aren't simply the creators are unwilling to share, but there are restraints around personal data and IRBs and legal kinds of things that make it hard to reuse this. And how we square that and document it appropriately as part of sharing and depositing data, I think is something that is a really hard problem that maybe hasn't received enough attention yet. There were allusions to the distinction between data management and long-term preservation of data, where long-term preservation, at least to my mind, is very specifically about preservation beyond the lifespan of those that created it, where the data has to be well enough understood and documented and curated that someone can reuse it across a long period of time and perhaps a disciplinary distance. I think there's another challenge, which I'll just mention, that has been alluded to, but perhaps not thrown down very squarely, and that's that the whole rhetoric of repositories is, at least to me and to many other people I've talked to, one that's very kind of file-oriented. It's the idea that I have a data set and I'm going to park it in a repository when I'm all done, and that it's a very sort of distinct and independent kind of thing that has a certain amount of fixity at some point. And in fact, there's lots of that, but there's also a lot of complex scientific information systems around where you contribute your data into a living, complicated system which actually integrates that data with a body of other similar data and connects it, and where people make use of that data in the context of a whole web of knowledge, and the whole sort of idea of citing back to an individual contribution there gets very, very tricky. Sometimes becomes almost meaningless. You think about, for example, the gap between contributing individual sequences and people who want to compute across, you know, hundreds of thousands of different sequences of different species to understand evolutionary kinds of things, and how you document or whether you document citation in those contexts raises problems that I don't think anybody's got a great grasp on yet. So those are a few, you know, that I'd nominate personally as ones I worry about. But with that, I'm just going to open the floor for people who want to raise issues, respond to those, or otherwise put things on the agenda of issues raised and potential recommendations coming out of our discussions here today. The floor is open. Yes, sir. Let's go over to the mic because we've still got people on the webcast. Oh, good. Few yeah, takers.
Just to resonate with this last point you made, Cliff, about we're not just talking about collections of files. You know, increasingly we're dealing with really, really big data. Astronomy has seen it already with all sky surveys. High energy physics has seen it in spades with CERN and LHC. And how do you think about preservation function when you're talking about petabytes. Mm-hmm. The LSST in astronomy, Large Synoptic Survey Telescope, is a petabyte scale data machine. The Square Kilometer Array is a petabyte a night data machine. These are scary numbers. And so you really have to rethink the whole paradigm around what it means to preserve and provide access, because you can't take the data home. You've got to move your analysis to the data. That's just flipping the whole thing over. That said, we still need to do a lot better on the long tail. There are a lot of file-based data sets out there that we do have to make sure stay available for a long time. And I think we're making substantial progress there, but this big data thing is kind of scary.
Amen.
Yeah.
Bonnie.
Okay, as Cliff said, if you want to get it in the report, you got to say it and you got to emphasize it so we can grasp it. So there were a couple of things that were said that I just wanted to go over a little bit. One is the reward structure. We still have some of the federal agencies in the room. One thing that always made me scratch my head, we were all talking about how do you change the reward structure, and everybody looks at universities and say you got to change it. How about the Office of Personnel Management within the federal government? There are a lot of scientists within the federal government, and they have the same challenges. They're rated on publications and impacts. And is there a way that the community can get together and start trying to impact OPM just for the federal scientists and engineers, which gets to the point of the whole thing about working together? You know, people say, someone asked, can you do it across the organizations? Well, this workshop is one of the opportunities to identify the things that we then can take forward and work together. So make sure we get your things on the list. As to the global network, the point was made that, you know, it's really global. It's not just U.S. Well, I think everything that we've been doing in this area just proves that point. You see all the organizations that's cooperating. In fact, we have so many global organizations that are cooperating that we have something called International Data Week. So all these internationally cooperating organizations can get together in one place and really have discussions on all of those things. So if you haven't registered or you haven't looked at it, go look up International Data Week September in Denver. And then the one thing I want to make sure is on the agenda is we've talked a little bit about economics and costs and cost benefits. And it's easy to look at a lot of costs, although it's not really so easy. But the benefits and the impacts are so very important. And one of the things I've heard in other workshops is we fundamentally don't know how to understand the costs and the economics of preservation. What does that really mean? Okay, so I think it's really something to NSF. We really need to have a research program on really understanding better the economics, both the costs, but particularly the returns on investment.
I'd just like to pick up very briefly before we go to you on a couple things Bonnie said. As we try to look at the potential role and actual role of BERTI and the academies more broadly, it genuinely is one of the places that can convene and host these kind of cross-community conversations to seek alignment between various kinds of reward structures and other motivational structures. And it has, I think, a very special place that way, as you know, this kind of event illustrates. The other thing I'd say around the economics is that there have been some efforts looking at that. There was the Blue Ribbon Commission a few years ago. There is a study that has produced some work, which disclosure I'm on the advisory board for, that the Sloan Foundation has been funding, trying to characterize what they call the stewardship gap. How much data is being produced by by various kinds of funded research that doesn't seem to be ending up in any kind of managed environment. And there are also some wonderful studies coming out of NIH that have looked at this around NIH-funded research. So we're starting to get some data points both on the costs and the costs of not doing this or of falling short here, but there is so much more we need to understand there.
Yeah, so actually, she started off with several of
Who are you, ma'am?
Oh, my name is Ruth Duer. I'm currently with the Ronan Institute, used to be with the National Snow and Ice Data Center. And I guess I have several of them I'd like to respond to since she kind of started with the things I was going to talk about. One is this whole reward structure thing. Yes, she mentioned, you know, agencies and people who are working for agencies and doing research. But, you know, there are a lot of non-tenure track, non-professors who are mostly the people who deal with data and who do that sort of thing. And there have been many reports that talk about their lack of career incentives and paths. And I think that that's, while I don't have an answer to that, it would be great if provosts actually recognized that that was a true statement, because they only ever talk about tenure. Oh, well. So that's one point. A second point is, as if I can remember them all. Oh, wow, I just lost it. Right. So to your point on the whole issue of databases full of data, I do think that we actually are beginning to have solutions to those kinds of things. For example, if you cited the whole database and then gave the query, that's the dynamic citation stuff that came out of the Research Data Alliance. I think they're beginning to be mechanisms for doing all those sorts of things. And also on the return on investment thing, that's something that the Federation of Earth Science Information Partners is starting to work on. There's a group there called Return on Investment that's trying to come up with a framework for repositories for determining their own return on investment, at least in the earth science. A lot of that's based off the BIGRI stuff out of Europe, who have put together a fairly robust, I would say, mechanism for doing that kind of assessment of return on investment. And so I guess those were my three main points.
All good. Thank you very much. I would just say that, well, I think we are making progress on these kind of aggregate query in terms of documenting research that's been done. It doesn't get at the credit side of citations well, which is still, I think, an unplumbed part of that. Sir.
So I think I basically wanted to pick up on what you just said, Cliff, and the last point you made, that data, we should probably not be viewing data simply as an object, but maybe more as a stream. And that's really kind of the point that Peter Fox and I were getting at in our paper that was questioning the whole data publication paradigm. And I think this whole thing also that Ruth is getting at with, and that Bonnie was getting at with incentives, who are we incenting to do what? And so we're sort of assuming that we're operating in this sort of academic mindset. Mm-hmm. And the people that are producing good data sets or that are building the square kilometer array, to use Bob's example, are not necessarily tenured faculty. And they do not get rewarded for publications in the same way. And similar, so I think what we really need to start thinking about is disaggregating the different issues that we're trying to address here. And as we go down the path towards software citation, I get really worried, because that's an even further separation, and that maybe we shouldn't even be talking about software citation. We should be talking about reproducibility and credit and things like that, and not just assuming that citation is the answer. So I think we need to be really careful about what we're trying to do with citation. On one hand, we know how to do it, especially for fixed collections and especially that long tail stuff, and we should just do it. And we've heard a lot about how that can be done. On the other hand, there's a lot of complexity, especially around this so-called big data or whatever you want to call it, these data as a stream, that maybe we should stop thinking in this academic mindset, and maybe we should be thinking in more of a production mindset. And how do we recognize producers that add value in a production stream along the way?
Thank you. I think those were important points that needed to be said. You know, there's a great tendency now to rely on various sorts of sometimes quite dubious bibliometrics as, you know, good measures of research impact. And I think the weaknesses in that are well understood and well documented. And asking the question about, and therefore we should extend this to data, why, is really a good question.
Jenny Larkin, NIH, and Mark is a hard act to follow. these are going to be pretty familiar to the other comments. Three brief ones. The first is, I like the focus on the different stakeholders, their roles, and what they might get out of it. And we already heard a very good addition to the stakeholders, which is the non-academic or non-tenure track people. The second is, a really important point was made that I would like to reiterate to clarify whether we're talking about, it was in the context of data sharing and management plans. If you're talking about being clear about data management or persistence, because conversations often conflate the two. And I thought the person who made clear that if you're talking about management, you're not necessarily guaranteeing persistence is very, very important. The third thing I heard that I just wanted to mention is there were some examples. I think Chris from NASA was getting to a place where I think we should also be thinking, what would we do with the data citations as well as all these other citations? Is we should be considering these as knowledge data objects of their own. There is data science we can do on that. There's mining that we can do on that. And Chris started to give some examples of real use cases where making these connections across these digital objects would greatly benefit. I'm a funder, selfishly from a funder's point of view, but you can look at it from almost any other stakeholder's point of view. And that, I think, is a value proposition.
Thank you. And I'd like to connect your remarks to what's a point that I think one of the folks on the funder panel made, which is really important, which is that things produced as a result of a grant go on long, long after the grant is over. And yet the compliance kind of framework is, you know, it stops when the grant's over, more or less. When we start looking at the health of scholarship overall, that you know, the effects of a grant run on, and this gets at this preservation versus management issue, for example. But this is a fundamental challenge that I think is very much implicit in what you're saying too. Esther.
Yeah, Esther Stein, National Academies. What I wanted to say, basically, Mark Parsons said, but what I wanted to build on what he said in the sense of not all careers are tenure track. There are other ways, and I think that because this is such an exploding field, it would be very good to think about alternative, to use a very old term, alternative career pathways. Maybe there are some specialties in the issues of data curation and data management and all of these data citation. Maybe there are specialties that are waiting to be defined and people going into them. And that doesn't mean necessarily academic careers. I mean, there are few positions in academia and there are a lot of PhDs out there. So if we start thinking ourselves and our mindset broadened to careers that are not necessarily geared towards tenure, but that they are fundamental to the field, I think this is a good time to think about those.
I would just note, related to that point, there is a study that's, I guess, 2 years old now, that came out of the academies funded in large part by the Institute of Museum and Library Studies about the workforce demands around data curation, which does shed some light on this.
I finally remembered my last point.
No problem.
And that is, okay, so far everybody's been talking about citations as a metric, et cetera. But I note that things like OSTP memos and a lot of other places mention the word public, and the public generally isn't writing papers, but they might be your largest and probably your most important stakeholder community in many cases. And so the question is, how does any of this relate to that? For example, if you have a data set that 1.2 million people come and look at every year because they think it's the coolest thing about the Arctic, and it's telling them what they need to know because it's a pretty picture that updates every day, how does that get counted as being an important thing to preserve? You know, even though there might only ever be zero or one papers written about it. And, you know, so where does the public come into this? How do they get counted?
Great question.
How does what they need get counted?
So this isn't what I was going to ask, but at the data archive, we count web hits, and we track those. Now, web hits. That's a different sort of metric. But web hits, web hits are really hard to count and make meaningful. So I'm not saying that's an answer, but that is something that is looked at a data archive level. But my question that was separate from that was, as a data manager or as a data archive, what's my reward or my incentive? I haven't, that was going back to what you had said earlier. That's not something that's been talked about. And to be honest, it's not something I've thought about because I get paid. I enjoy what I do. So that's my incentive. But that doesn't ever come into the discussion in these big groups. You know, we as data managers sort of like, okay, we do what we do and that's good enough for us. I'm not asking for anything per se, but it's just something to think about.
Well stated. I will just add to that comment about the general public. We also have seen some glorious examples of the repurposing of these data sets for education, especially in K-12. The difference you make using your data to introduce high school students to astronomy every year, year after year, ought to get on that credit list somewhere too. Peter.
Just one quick notation around incentives. I've, in sort of my experience with talking about incentives, I always find the problem is usually what are the inhibitions of doing some of these things? And the inhibitions are very, very real in any organization. And sometimes they're structural, sometimes they're reporting inhibitions, but they are very, very real. And it'd be good if we could identify some of those and maybe even talk about them out loud and maybe even eliminate them because they shouldn't be there. So I just want to put that out there. But maybe as a suggestion for going forward, we've heard about a number of professional societies and organizations that are conducting conversations around topics like data citation. And it seems to me that this audience and maybe the audience online would like to hear about who those organizations are, what are the topics they're talking about, what format are they talking about them in? Because it just occurred to me, I just reviewed a working group proposal for the Research Data Alliance on, no, not archives. No, I wouldn't do that. On credit and attribution coming out of the taxonomic data working group community. And the incentive there, their incentive, was that the people who are putting immense amount of efforts into the data curation for those collections get no credit. There's no mechanism at all built into what they do. And, you know, they would barely even appear possibly on a data citation. But that conversation's about to go on, and I'm not saying everyone has to go to RDA, but I know similar things in iAssist, which are fantastic. But I don't think everyone has a clear view of what all these are. So I'm wondering, is Birdie the place to sort of maybe do that collection of organizations matching with data-oriented topics? And we could start with citation. I mean, I know Force 11's probably got the best list of organizations that are dealing with citations, but there might be other venues that people should know about.
Excellent question. And you're right, there's a lot of this seems to be, you know, getting revisited by various societies and often not well connected to other activities. Jerry.
Okay, Jerry Sheehan. So I guess my general comment is that a lot of the discussion, we tend to think about citations, researchers, and their reward systems. And I think a lot of the comments have said we need to get broader than that. And I want to make just a couple of comments along those lines. Maybe the first, you mentioned the notion of compliance and things go beyond a grant. I think when we think about reward systems and reward structures, I think we want to be able to get to the point where we don't need that kind of compliance monitoring by agencies that we're checking to make sure you did what was in your data management plan or what was in the mandate, right? How can we build systems? And this might get to the earlier comment about the overall system for rewards and incentives. How do we get to the point where this becomes self-sustaining, as it has for, at least in the research community, for publications, where it's not because the agency's checking to make sure you got a publication that you're writing them, right? But how do we build data into the fabric of what we're doing? I think my second point was then also thinking about the other types of rewards that exist. And Bonnie had mentioned, you know, don't forget there's promotion and tenure in the government. There are also other rewards that people get. And sometimes it's the reward when I think about what governments can do, it's getting that piece of funding or that chunk of funding for your project, right? And can we better recognize government agencies recognizing data, good data management practices, in those rewards? And there are probably other kinds of rewards that people respond to. Some of it's just the feedback, right? Whether you've published a data set or you published a paper, you like to see how many citations, how many downloads, right? Is it the public that's making use of it? Can we build in, based on citation and other mechanisms, the tooling to provide that feedback so that people see how their data are being used, and that can provide some additional incentive for them? And I guess the third point is thinking through one of the points that just struck me through the day was the broad range of things that citation enables, from recognition and reward to tracking return on investment. And I think as you think through a report out of the workshop, thinking through and documenting why we want citation, what it enables, comes back to a question that was asked in the federal panel about, would you use the same kind of citation or data identifier structure for all those different uses? And I think that's a fair question to ask at this point, especially as we see a lot of agencies experimenting with different kinds of identifier systems and how do they match to the different kinds of purposes for which citation can support.
Superb question. Go ahead.
Rewards don't have to be a tenured position or $1 million grant. They can be really stupid. Giving a Dublin badge to an article was shown to increase rates of data citation in the leading journal in the field of psychology from about 4 to 40% of articles provided data in persistent repositories just for a stupid little badge. And you don't get tenure for a badge, you don't get a grant for a badge, but it's fun.
Fair enough. George.
I got lots of them if you want
to. Is there a Pokemon in the room?
George Strawn, NASA, NASBirdie. A comment and a question. Comment, about 10 years ago, NYDERT had a academy study on supercomputing and computational science. And we heard from a lot of computational scientists, and their standard complaint in many, across many disciplines was, we don't have good rewards for our computational sidekicks. Let's call them computational scientists or whatever, the people who assist, not the leaders who are going to have tenure and so forth. And it sounds to me like we're reinventing that wheel, that we will have the same trouble providing career paths and growth and continuing employment rewards for the people who assist the star faculty in doing the data that is necessary to implement data-intensive science. So we've been down this road before in different parts of computing. We're going down it again. They didn't seem to come up with much of a solution. Maybe we can find one and tell it to them later. I don't know. But so that's the comment. The question I have for the data archive people is how many of the repositories and archives are beginning to use or do use cloud services as opposed to developing their own infrastructure? Question of capital resources versus operational resources. And some people would think that we're moving a lot of various capabilities into the cloud. I'm wondering if that's true with our scientific databases or whether they're still probably built on local hardware or not. So that's a general question.
I don't know that there's a quick answer to your general question. I have seen some studies looking at the relative costs of that, but nothing I've seen has really tried to directly answer your question about adoption rates. Do you want to comment on that?
Yeah, to answer the question about the archives, at NASA, at the ESDIS level, there's a working group for cloud computing. So we are looking into bringing the code to the data rather than the data to the code. I'm not directly involved in that, so I'm not exactly sure where they are. There's Chris, you might know. But that's definitely an effort that's happening. Chris certainly would have.
Yeah, so actually I'm leading that effort. And right now it's mostly at the prototype level. There's so many risks involved in moving to an operational stance in cloud that we feel we need a year, 2 years, 3 years to really understand what the operational implications are, as well as the long-term cost implications for archiving the cloud.
I feel like we also need to qualify George's question. Just talking about the cloud is a very nebulous thing. I mean, one reading of that is the commercial storage and computational infrastructure clouds, but there are other answers too.
As they say,
I've ordered
clouds from both sides now.
There you go. Yep. Gosh, we've got a lot of comments and we're running out of time.
Okay. I'm Don Collins with NOAA's National Centers for Environmental Information, and we've also been looking at cloud technologies for both archival storage, for cloud as a processing environment, and like was just said, we're still assessing it and the costs, and so it's still something we're looking at, but we haven't made any firm decisions yet.
This is obviously an area that needs tracked. Sir.
Hey, Cliff. I have three quick points as a researcher, and these points may be kind of on the horizon for what this group is trying to do. The first point is, as someone who pulls data from many different sources, nearly all of which are outside of my field, it would be very nice to get some sort of notification when one of these databases are either updated or superseded. Okay, that's point one. The second point is, if I do find a database, it'll be nice to have like an Amazon or Netflix-like algorithm that magically suggests five other databases that I might be interested in, right? Because again, these things are not in my field. You know,
yeah.
This is like the wildebeest and rainfall people. You know, I don't go to the rainfall conferences, but if I'm using the data, I'd like to know.
This is like the ozone example we heard earlier.
Yes, absolutely. So, and the last point is, as someone publishing data, it would be very nice to connect with people who are using my data. So I can call them up and say, hey, what can I do better? How can I serve your field in a more efficient way?
Great points. I'm sorry, I should have asked you who you were, by the way.
So, Michael Bellamy, Oak Ridge National Lab, radiation research.
Thank you.
Bob Downs from Columbia and the NASA CDAC. I just wanted to raise the point that a lot of these issues, such as credit and many of the other topics that they were discussing, are really they're a function of the timing of all of this. That is, when research grant is made, it's usually for 1 to 3, maybe 4 or 5 years, and it's usually at the end of that time that the data are produced and the publications are produced. And that's the time when the activities to start archiving the data and all these other activities that we're talking about, including citations, begin. But there's no funding for the investigators at that time. And so from the perspective of somebody who's in a data center, we often can see the differences between the behavior of those who are being funded to work with us versus those whose funding has long gone and, we're begging for their help or their assistance. Mm-hmm. And in fact, they really don't have the time to spare because they're being funded to do something else. Thanks.
Thank you.
So, Pat Knezik from the National Science Foundation. I wanted to follow up on what Jerry said, and it's actually related to what the gentleman who just spoke said. And this goes from our point of view back to the monitoring, and not only during the award, but beyond. I just want to give you guys a sense of the magnitude of the problem and why it is something that I think needs to be addressed by the community. So the NSF, you may not have noticed, gives out about 11,000 awards a year. That average 3 years, that's 30,000 awards per year. And then if you want to monitor beyond the date of the award drop, we do not have the capacity to do that with human resources. So I think of the problem in a slightly different way, that we have to identify some way that we know things are getting published and cited appropriately that doesn't require active human monitoring, because we just aren't going to be able to do that. So that was one point. And the other thing is, I wanted to follow up. I wanted to do this actually up when we had the panel, but I didn't have time, with what Chris Linus was saying about the different ways of starting to think about using citations and so forth. And I thought he brought up a couple of really intriguing ideas, made me think we need Google for citations. But I also wanted to put in a cautionary note, because he was talking about what a couple people brought up, finding good data sets. And he mentioned, if the ones that are being used the most. Well, at least in our field, a lot of times the best data set is the one that just came out and no one else has used it yet. So I think we have to think about not just uses, but time of publication, and it's a more complicated problem than that. So those two things I wanted to mention. Thanks.
Thank you. That reminder about scale is a very helpful point to be cognizant of. I'm going to give you and you the last words, and then I'm going to turn it over to George, who will close the meeting and say a few words about key actions and next steps.
Thanks. Todd Vision, University of North Carolina and Dryad. So I wanted to just make a point and raise a question regarding training. It's only come up really briefly today, so I just thought it was worth emphasizing. So while data science folks may not all be in academia for all their careers, nearly everyone in science working in data and software comes through graduate training. And so they are in academia in this critical kind of bottleneck period. And there's enormous capacity for training of those students. That's what we do in academia during that period. So a lot of the issues that have talked about trying to sort of transcend a culture of compliance, bring about culture change, change norms around scholarly communication, around data, these have to do with training. I think that the way that many students in many disciplines get the norms that they have is by being trained on them by people two generations behind them in the scientific life cycle. And so this is part of the reason why culture change is slow, right? So let's not have to wait for retirement. How can academia do a better job of taking advantage of the informal education opportunities, the formal education opportunities of graduate students to affect these kinds of scholarly communication culture changes faster? I've been very impressed by the uptake, for instance, of the data citation, the data carpentry workshops, which there's huge demand for, not out of a need for compliance, but out of a sense that they're going to improve their productivity and their value as a scientist by taking these classes. And so that seems like a good model for reaching out to graduate students on these topics, which are usually not taught as part of anyone's formal educational program.
Very important point. You have the last word.
I just wanted to quickly close to reemphasize what Bonnie said, that International Data Week will be a great opportunity to continue this conversation. So I think this has been a really good conversation. And just to say a little bit about what International Data Week is, the second half of the week is the RDA plenary, the Research Data Alliance plenary, which is very much a working meeting, the working groups getting together and trying to do their work, one of which is on dynamic data citation, another which is on education of researchers, et cetera, trying to actually do things. The first half of the week is the CoData WDS SciDataCon, which is more of a research conference where people are presenting papers and there's panels and so forth on topics in the field of data science and data management. And one session that I just want to push because I'm chairing it, but I think it's really relevant to the conversation that we've just been having and it gets to George's point, is what is a data professional and what does it mean to have a data professional career path? So just something to look out for. I think this will be a great opportunity to carry this conversation forward.
That whole week has a very rich agenda, and if you've not looked, I'd urge you to Google up International Data Week and check out all the events that are taking place.
There's going to be a big data citation discussion with the results of it. There's going to be a big data citation discussion with the results of all the national workshops.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. There were many, many good, important points, valuable ideas, and things that surely call for further thinking about an action. And now I'm going to let George sum it all up. Thank you again.
Well, I had the opportunity to welcome you this morning. Now I have the equally pleasant opportunity to welcome you for your participation during the day. If you enjoyed this meeting nearly as much as I did, I think you probably found it worthwhile, because I certainly did. This was an excellent meeting. I was telling Jerry earlier in the day that when the open access memo came out of OSDP 3 years ago, first thing I did was dance in the street, because I had been waiting for it for a long time. And then the second thing I did, what reality set in, I thought, oh boy, this is going to be hard. People are going to gripe. It's not going to, it's going to be tough to get going. Well, based on meetings such as this, we've made a lot more progress in 3 years than I had initially hoped. So I'm leaving here buoyed up. I don't need a drink afterwards because I'm depressed. I just need a drink in celebration. And one of the other pleasant tasks I have to do here is to thank certain people. For example, Esther Stein, my colleague here, has been very influential in putting this thing together, as has my other colleague, John Ahern. I don't know if John's still here or not. But anyway, thank you both for your efforts. Thank Bonnie for her leadership capability and her committee members, the U.S. CoData people, who include Micah Altman, who's here, Dan Cohen, Francel Linares, Heather Parrish. You've got it misspelled here. Heath, I was trying to make a Heath Parrish. No, that's
She's
not right.
She's in Oak Ridge.
She's in Oak Ridge. Paul Euler's been a committee member. Mark Parsons, Chris Borgman, who's here in spirit only, I guess you'd say, and Todd Carpenter. So thanks to all these people for the organizational efforts. Thanks to all the panelists and the moderators. And I think we've got a ball that's rolling. Bonnie's already mentioned that the workshop summaries are going to be put together, collated at an international level. I expect some very interesting conclusions will come out looking at the similarities and differences around the world. And so that information will be certainly made available once it's put together. And let's all stay tuned, because I think we're all riding a very interesting horse right now. This is a decadal activity. It's not an annual activity, right? So stay on board. This is a marathon. It isn't a 100-yard dash. And I think we're involved in doing something that is truly going to be called part of the second scientific revolution. So thank you for coming, and look forward to seeing you all again. Bye-bye.